guys, and welcome to episode 119 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I got on Rose Cartwright. Now, many of you have asked me to interview her, and she's someone I've wanted to interview for. I think I've been chasing her for a couple years now, so we finally got her on the show, and it was a pleasure to talk to her. She's a delight, and it was just, great to get to know her, find out more about her book, Pure, which I read, I think it was like 18 months, maybe longer ago. Great book. Kind of reads like a fiction, but it is non-fiction. It is about her life, and it's very gripping, very compelling, and I know it's helped many people. So Rose is a writer, author of the book Pure, which is now also being turned into a drama series, which is going to be on Channel 4 in the UK at some point later this year or next, and she hopefully will get it distributed elsewhere in the world, so sit tight. And Rose is also director over at intrusivethoughts.org. We talk about her book, the TV show, and then most of this show is comprised of your questions. So I put out on Instagram and Facebook, I believe, and asked your questions. I didn't get time to ask them all, but stuff we cover is, you know, how did she feel when it first started happening? How to deal with the kind of embarrassment, shame, and distraction of intrusive thoughts. ERP against obsessions, what was the most effective thing she did, kind of where she's at in recovery now, any relapses and how she deals with them, where she had to reconceptualize her sexuality differently as part of her recovery, and then I kind of get towards the end, I ask her a question around stigma, what the community can do, you know, around dealing with phrases such as I'm so OCD, as you see in the media, and she gives a good answer to that. Rose also talks about meditation a lot at the end and how that's helped her learn to love herself, and obviously the importance of things like ERP in her recovery. So it's a fascinating story. She goes in detail. As always, a quick plug for the membership site. If you're interested in getting more exclusive episodes, more than the four I do a month as it is, head over to theocdstories.com/join to find out more. And without further ado, here is Rose. On the podcast today, I have Rose Cartwright. Rose is a writer and author of the book Pure, which is now a Channel 4 drama series. Rose is also a director over at intrusivethoughts.org. Welcome to the show, Rose.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you on. I've had a lot of requests to get you on over the last couple of years. So,
it's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So I have read your book. I think I read it when it came out. So it's been a while now.
Yeah, it's a while. Cool. Yeah.
How's it all gone?
Yeah, it's gone well. It's been a journey, but it's been lots of fun, and I've met a lot of really amazing people with OCD, and it's been really great working in the community and getting to know people here. So, yeah, it's still happening. It's an unfolding thing.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear, and the success is deserved. So it's also turning into a TV show now, I believe.
It is, yeah, a drama series. It's a fictionalization of the book. Obviously, my book's a true story, and the Channel 4 drama adaptation is a fictional story based on that, with a central character who has the very same type of OCD that I have, and all the fun and games that leads to.
And how's that kind of unfolded? How's it been kind of watching it being created?
It's been really amazing. It's been really therapeutic. It's been, at times it's been difficult because when I wrote the book, I kind of didn't want to engage with the material again for a while. You know, I kind of, when you sort of write about OCD and you talk about OCD so much and you do press about OCD, like it feels like kind of like your life is OCD. So then when it came to like working on the scripts and working with the writer and the producers to get it shipshape, it kind of, it's like, oh God, really? It's like my story's getting retold again. But actually it's been really amazing, and it's been really cathartic to see it fictionalized and to go down to set and see intrusive thoughts being acted out by actors. Like, wow, this is like, talk about sort of externalizing something that was once a secret in your head. Like, to see it acted out really does that. It's been pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And how have the actors kind of adapted to it?
Well, there's kind of like, it's interesting because, you know, I'm as far as I know, the only person on the production that has or has had that type of OCD, intrusive sexual thoughts. So, in a way, it's quite difficult for people to relate to, but actually, you know, that you know, the having a thought that you think that you're not going to be having at any particular moment isn't actually peculiar to OCD. Like, you know, that's something that a lot of people can relate to and empathize with. And I think there's a lot in the lead character that any audience member will relate to, rather than just people with OCD. So the actors have just been really amazing and so eager to learn and so sensitive and empathetic. I couldn't really have asked for more from them.
Oh, that's brilliant. And last sort of question on the TV show, when can we expect to see it?
So it hasn't been scheduled yet, but it's going to be, I believe, at this point somewhere between, well, basically autumn, so kind of September to, well, hopefully it won't be after Christmas. I don't know, basically, but end of this year, we think, at the moment. Yeah.
All right, brilliant. And a large part of my audience are non-UK, so is there any agreement to get it on Netflix or something like that?
That's the dream.
Yeah.
There's chats happening at the moment about like international distribution, and I don't think anything's been decided yet. But I hope that's the long-term plan, is that it's going to be available to international audiences. So
Cool.
fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, brilliant. So I'm sure a lot of people listening would have read your book, but in case they haven't, it'd be good just to give a summary of your story.
Yeah, sure. So, I'm 32 now. I started experiencing intrusive thoughts when I was 15 years old. I'd had a lot of anxiety problems in the build up to my adolescence. And then when I was 15, I started experiencing really distressing intrusive thoughts about child abuse. And at the time, I grew up in the Midlands, and this was sort of 2000 and what, 2001. I had no idea that it was OCD, and these thoughts were obviously extremely distressing to me. I was confused. I felt incredibly guilty. I was terrified. It was like, you know, 24/7. I thought I was going to go to prison if I told anybody. And that was basically the start of a long, very long OCD journey for me, and the book tells that story. As I grew up, the more dominant theme became intrusive doubts about my sexuality, accompanied by really vivid intrusive sexual images that made me question myself, made me question everything about me, whether I could be in relationships, whether I was gay or straight. And I just sort of ended up in this hole of obsessions and compulsions, and it took me a really long time to find my way out of it. And the book is about that journey, and going through all sorts of dreadful therapies to until I finally found something that worked and sort of got better and started to love myself again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you for that. And yeah, I enjoy how you wrote the book because it almost does read like a fiction, which it makes it so easy to read.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was really important to me to not shy away from the darkness of OCD.
Yeah.
Like for me, like it took me, like I was suicidal with it. I self-harmed. I was in a really, really bad place for a long time, and I sort of tried to bring like how real that was to the page. But by the same token, especially with my obsessive themes, like there's also something that I found quite absurd and in retrospect entertaining about how inappropriate some of this stuff was. So I tried to write about it with a sense of humor too, also because I wanted to try and write a book that, as you say, that people wanted to read. I didn't want to sort of write a, you know, a sort of 200 page misery memoir, even though that's what like
Yeah.
OCD can feel like a lot of the time. I kind of wanted it to be able to be enjoyed by people without OCD too, because I really want to get the word out about this type of OCD. So
Yeah.
I'm always trying to find ways to make it an accessible subject matter.
Absolutely.
For people.
And I think you achieved that. On your story, a large part of this podcast is about recovery. So a lot of the questions from the listeners that I'll be asking are all kind of based on that. Before we get to listener questions, it'd be good just to hear kind of what therapy you did, any medication, anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I should probably say off the top of the, from the top that I'm not fully recovered. And I don't think that OCD is something that I'll ever get cured from. I know people that are completely symptom free. That's not to say that that's not possible for people, but for me, like, I still get intrusive thoughts, I still get trapped, I still go down those rabbit holes. It's just that the thoughts don't affect me in the same way that they used to.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a kind of recovery. You know, I'm happy, I have a really full life. Sometimes my OCD still gets me down a lot, and it's still something that I have to manage on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
There was no kind of like, yeah, this is something that I can fully put in my past. It's something that is still a part of me.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten your question.
Thank you for breaking that down though. But it was about kind of what treatments you did or still do.
Well, I had... Do you want like a breakdown of all the therapies that I've tried? Because
if you feel it helps.
Well, presented with symptoms, I was a teenager and I was kind of, I didn't really know how to express what I was experiencing. So I kind of like sugarcoated it and talked around it in quite general terms about thinking unpleasant things, and ended up getting put on antidepressants when I was 18, which in retrospect I think were probably, the dose was too strong, because I ended up feeling very much like a zombie. And they didn't relieve any of the OCD symptoms. Obviously at the time I didn't know it was OCD. So that was a kind of a first sort of ditch attempt. And actually the SSRIs that I got put on, I think because the dose was so strong, I just kind of like planed me out emotionally, and I started self-harming, because it was the only thing that made me sort of feel real, like feel like I could have emotions again. That wasn't very successful. And then when I went to uni, went to see various sort of uni doctors and kind of went through a few like talking therapies, which I think there's certainly a place for talking therapy, and I would never write it off, but I think in specific treatment of OCD, it can be quite problematic, because the therapist was trying to get me to, you know, sort of delve around in my past and try and find reasons why I thought I might be having these thoughts. And the theory was that if we explored the origins of those thoughts enough, then it would make them go away. But actually, that's kind of just recreating the compulsive rumination soul searching cycle that people with OCD spends their whole lives locked in anyway. So that made me worse. I then got sent for psychodynamic therapy, which again is fairly Freudian in origin, and there was a lot of talk about family and about the past, and about establishing a more healthy identity for myself, which again, you know, I know people with various anxiety disorders and mood disorders that have found those kind of therapies useful. It didn't work for me. I by about 3 years into this process, I was at my worst, and I'd been put on other drugs that also hadn't worked. What was the tipping point? I kind of almost self-diagnosed, I guess, just through reading and then having that diagnosis corroborated by professionals. It didn't cut. It was that way up. It was bottom up rather than top down.
Yeah.
And then eventually, so I got put through some NHS therapy, which was, I know people that have been lucky in the NHS lottery therapy for OCD, finding ERP and CBT. I was unlucky and I got put on, again, more unhelpful therapy. And eventually I was in a really, I was, you know, it was quite a dangerous situation, the point I'd got to. I was sort of struggling to get out of bed and thinking a lot about not being here anymore.
Yeah.
And in the end, I decided to pay for therapy, pay for exposure and response prevention therapy, because I hadn't been offered it anywhere in England. I paid for to see to go to practice in New York, and that was really the first time that I'd ever had the kind of full scope of my OCD acknowledged and broken down, explained to me by a professional.
Yeah.
And I went through it was a long time. I think it was, I can't remember now, I think it was like maybe 10 months. It's a long process, took me a long time of exposure work to kind of habituate to the fears and the thoughts that I'd ran from for, which like 10 years, it was 10 years by this point. I was, I was 20, 25. So yeah, that, and it was horrible. I really didn't want to do the exposures. But at that time, my obsessive theme was still intrusive sexual thoughts, intrusive doubts about my sexuality. So all the exposure exercises were sexual in nature, and I had to look at them, and whatever thoughts or anxieties arose, I just had to embrace the uncertainty of whatever that meant and try and get on with my day.
Yeah.
But when you're working and you're having to go and watch porn in the toilet on your lunch break, you know, it's not the best for your self-esteem. I mean, I'm sure people do that anyway, but fine. So it was really hard, but it was the only thing that gave me relief of any kind. And yeah, as I say, that was a decade in.
Hmm.
And sort of from that point, I'm just gonna take a sip of water. Sorry, I've got really bad cough. By that point, because I had such a better understanding of it than I was. It just helped me talk about it, and then talking about it was really helpful too. And so I think the exposure therapy like kind of sorted out the kind of the real kind of nuts and bolts behavioral stuff, like this is how you respond in the moment, like the skills, quite practical stuff, and then the healing, the real healing kind of started afterwards when I started to talk and when I started to kind of love myself and I started to meet other people who'd been through the same thing.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's thank you for bringing down that story. It's really interesting. And, you know, unfortunately that your tale of going through all the different therapies, it seems to be many people have unfortunately gone through that because people don't acknowledge that it's OCD soon enough. And the fact that it sounds like, you know, you got worse the longer it was left.
Definitely.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you obviously got the right treatment in the end. How long did it take doing the ERP for you to start notice a shift in how you felt or in compulsions?
How long did it take? It was really hard for me for like, like 2 or 3 months, and then sort of like things started to like shift. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of difficult to like track my progress, because even by the end, like the very end of ERP, like I was still having some anxiety responses. Like it wasn't like that anxiety was completely extinguished.
Yeah.
Again, some people have that. Some people do get to that end point of where, okay, I can, you know, I can look at a picture of, you know, I can watch Psycho and not have intrusive thoughts about violence. But I never got there. So it was hard all the way through. Like, and I, even to this day, like I still get triggered by certain types of content. But yeah, the first couple of months were particularly grueling, and then after that, it got a little bit easier. Yeah.
Okay. No, thank you. It's really good.
It's worth sticking with.
Absolutely. I was just asking it because I know some people get immediate sort of not breakthroughs, but they see a change quite quickly, and other people it takes quite a while to see that shift.
Yeah.
Okay, so now I've got a ton of questions from my listeners, as you saw on Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
So you've answered some of these already. So the first one would be, Please can you ask Rose how she deals with the embarrassment, shame and distraction of intrusive thoughts?
How do I deal with it? Well, a lot of at first I was very ashamed and I was very embarrassed. But for me, a really good antidote to feeling embarrassed was to just kind of get it all out there. So these days I'm not really embarrassed at all. But then, you know, I have moments of weakness and I feel really exposed. And also, like, with the show coming up, I kind of, there's an element of me that, like, where I'm just like, what the hell am I doing? like, what is going to happen when, you know, because the book is not a mass scale medium, but it's suddenly going to be in the living rooms of millions of people. And it's going to be in, you know, it's a national thing. So I probably will be embarrassed. I'll be embarrassed if my parents watch it, for sure. Don't watch it with your parents, people. It is really tough. And initially I was really ashamed and really embarrassed. But for me, it was just kind of like sort of shame attacking and just sort of taking it head on and just going, well, because I understand the condition, I know that I don't have anything to be ashamed of. That's how I get through.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of what you've done there about opening up and obviously doing the TV show now, they're almost kind of exposures in themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as I say, like, I'm not cured. So the whole process of having the story, like, retold and, like, going down to set, like, ironically, that being, like, a triggering thing for me, watching, like, a fictionalized version of my own story being acted out, like, yeah, I have to have all my sort of OCD skills, all my ducks in a row when I go to set. I'm like, okay, this is quite a confronting thing for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. Okay, so the next question is, and you kind of answered this, but I'll ask it anyway in case there's anything else. It's, what was the most effective part of her ERP against obsessions?
What was the most effective part of my ERP against obsessions? I think it was, so for me, what the most maddening and depressing thing about OCD was the feeling like I would never get an answer. And if I didn't get an answer, then my life couldn't continue. That was the feeling. Like, I remember being in my early 20s and just thinking, oh, well, there's no way that in like 2 years time, I'll still be asking myself the same question. Like, that's just like impossible. So, what the ERP did to tackle that was just, it just made me aware when I was ruminating.
Yeah.
And because the ruminating just took over my life. Like, I didn't spend a single second not ruminating on questions of my identity. So to have someone break that down and show me when I was doing that, and to show me that, yeah, you can do that, or you can sit with the anxiety, and it's going to hurt like hell when you sit with that anxiety, but at least you're not in this frantic soul searching answer seeking mode. Like, that was just the worst for me. So very quickly, actually, with ERP, like, that stopping the compulsions was like a revelation. I was like, okay, well, I still feel like shit, but at least I don't have, you know, at least I'm not still searching for answers 24/7.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, because you're kind of, you're almost both of those solutions, whether it's staying in the obsession and doing the compulsion is painful, and then doing the exposure is painful and resisting the compulsion. But one of those is actually going to lead to a better life.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's kind of choosing your poison almost.
Yeah, there's like two types of suffering. There's the type of suffering that leads to more suffering, and there's the type of suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And you have to do the latter. You just have to do it, and it hurts. It hurts so much, but that's the only way I ever got any relief.
Nice. Yeah, good way of putting it. Okay, so next question is, has Rose ever had any relapses? And if so, how does she cope with them?
Relapses, like, as I said, like, I've never been like fully, like completely, like free of it. So there's never been a point where I'm like, I'm like completely happy and dandy, no intrusive thoughts, and then something happens and they start up again. Like, it's always kind of like a low level thing. But definitely when I'm in a stressful life situation, or like, for example, at the moment I'm single and I'm dating, that's massively triggering for me. I mean, I think anyone with any kind of anxieties, like, you know, dating and relating to other people, it throws a lot of stuff up. But especially if you've had the type of OCD where you are obsessed about sexuality and about relationships, like, that's, you know, that's like, that's still like super intense. How do I deal with it? Just using the same skills that I've learned, just absolutely never engaging in compulsions, or sometimes because my brain is so habitual and it did it for so long, I'll notice when I'm ruminating and I'll catch myself and be like, I see what you're doing. And then just kind of like trip the loop and okay, let's move on to something else. But just, yeah, not acting out compulsions, embracing doubt. I'm still kind of unsure, and like, maybe this is a conversation that I can have publicly sometime, but I'm still kind of unsure on like what the rules are about like how often or if you're supposed to like reassure yourself that you've got OCD. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but like, I don't know, like, because the therapy that I was given was pretty like hard line, where it was just like, yeah, you just kind of got to accept that, you know, maybe you don't even have OCD, maybe you just got it wrong, maybe you were lying about the whole thing. And generally I've been like pretty hard line, but sometimes there's just a bit of me that just wants to go, can I just call this, can I just say what this is, can I just say that it's OCD? So I don't know, that's something that I'm still like, sometimes I kind of give myself a little bit of reassurance, but I by no means would suggest that's what anyone else does.
I think in no way am I medically trained, this is just my own personal opinion. I'm kind of on the fence, so I do a bit of both.
So I
like the hard line, but there's a point occasionally you have to kind of almost just say, yeah, you know, this is OCD. But it's when you keep reassuring yourself, I think that's where it's a problem.
I guess like sometimes I just like, I have a thought, like, and I know I've had this thought like so many times, and like, I just sort of like, I see it for what it is. In a way that I couldn't have done like 5 years ago. I'm like, yeah, I know that is a product of this obsessive part of my brain, and therefore I don't need to pay too much attention to it. But yeah, you're right. I think if I was doing that like 100 times a day in response to every thought, that would amount to pretty bad compulsive behavior. But
absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds like what you know the definition you gave there is you're kind of labeling the thought. Which is different, right, to reassurance, because it's almost like an acceptance commitment therapy. You acknowledge the thought, you label it, you see it as something separate from yourself.
Yeah.
So in a way, that's what you're doing there. You're just saying, oh, there's that thought again.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Cool. Yeah, maybe that's a question I'll keep in mind for next time I get a therapist on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still like learning about all this stuff, and also like, professional opinions change, like whatever therapy is kind of like modish, like obviously like ERP and CBT are kind of like the considered the gold standard by most people, but then like, you know, it sort of shifts over time, and even in just like the 5 years I've been talking about it, you hear different people talk about different techniques, so it's important for me to kind of stay on my toes and keep asking questions as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, because you've written a book, you're probably almost seen in that position where people look at you like you have all the answers.
Yeah. It's really important that no one assumes that, because I really don't. Like, I'm still, you know, I'm still a student of OCD.
Yeah, absolutely. And the therapists I've had on a couple of times, you know, their opinions change, not dramatically, but the way they look at things differ slightly, which is good,
exactly.
Right? Because it shows they're learning and that they're staying open-minded.
It is good, but then it's really hard when you're seeking therapy and you hear two people who have got all the right letters next to their name and they're saying different things and you don't know what course to go down. That can be really tricky, and that's something that I still struggle with, because, you know, you just don't know. Like, people have different ideas about what works. I think you kind of have to be empowered to take control of your own treatment and sort of your own treatment plan. And, you know, you can't put 100% of faith in any other one person, because people have different ideas, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's a good point. I mean, ERP is obviously scientifically the most proven for OCD, but even among clinicians that use ERP, the way they deliver it, obviously it's very standardized, but in terms of their philosophy behind it is going to differ.
That's it.
Like your one you said was very hard-lined of you can't say it's OCD, and another one may be completely okay with it, and it's just finding one that works for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right, so next question then from the listener would be, I've lost my place now. Done that one. Okay, so this one is from Alvis, who I believe you met at the OCD Action Conference recently.
Yes, yeah.
Cool. So he's doing a PhD studying something to do with linguistics and its effect on OCD, so the words we use around it. So it gives you a backstory behind this. So he said, I'd be curious to know whether she had to conceptualize her sexuality differently as part of her recovery.
Oh, that's deep. Yeah. Did I have to conceptualize my sexuality differently? Not really. I mean, I guess like people who've never had this type of OCD would just take their sexuality for granted, right? Mm. And someone who was gay or someone who was straight would feel generally kind of like fairly confident in that. Whereas I kind of... I guess I, as part of my therapy and as part of my acceptance of doubt, I kind of just have to accept the kind of the sort of fluidity and lack of lines in sexuality. I absolutely identify as straight, but then because of my OCD and because of the grooves that my OCD tends to move down, I kind of have to resist the temptation of kind of like clinging to that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
I identify as straight, but also, like, you know, who knows? I guess that's just a kind of healthy way to think about sexuality anyway, right?
Yeah, very much so. And that seems to be the direction society's going. And I mean, historically, and I think that's I was talking to him yesterday actually, and the Romans and other people in the past all kind of looked at sexuality as, they didn't define it as gay, straight, heterosexual, homosexual, transsexual, etc. It's kind of more the last few hundred years that we've started labeling all these things. You're right. You know, is that actually, let me define, I'm mumbling here, but when you kind of redefined it and had to, you know, you identified as straight, but you had to kind of be a bit more fluid in how you looked at that definition.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you consciously did, or is that something you've noticed happening as a byproduct?
Not really. I mean, I guess it's just something I don't really know. Like if someone like asked me, like, what's your sexual identity? Like, I would say straight and not have to think about it.
Yeah.
But like, if ever I found myself like obsessing on that question again, like I would have to therapeutically, as part of the, you know, the skills that I've learned to deal with that question, I would go, well, yeah, but who knows? You know, you might meet a woman tomorrow that you'd fall in love with, because you just have to, you actually just don't know.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, it's just, I think it's really important and really healthy if you've got a brain that it tends to be quite obsessive and clingy and sticky, to kind of, embrace, like, not knowing how things can change.
Yeah, no, really good point. And the next listener question is, I'd like to know how she manages her OCD day to day after therapy. What sorts of things does she do to maintain gains and keep OCD at bay? Now, you've answered this a lot already, but I guess actually, let me add to this question. There's one thing you mentioned a couple of times about learning to love yourself again. What did you do around that?
Day to day management is just, like, as I said, like, not engaging in compulsions and putting into practice all the skills I learned in therapy in that way. Occasionally I might do an exposure if I'm like feeling like I just need to kind of like top up, and kind of like, just if I feel like I'm kind of like avoiding something, I'll just be like, okay, let's just go and like watch something, and then like accept all the doubt and discomfort that comes along with that. But generally day to day, it's just a case of, yeah, being aware of what's going on, not letting myself do compulsions. But the loving myself part of it, I guess, like, I found that, like, CBT and ERP, like, super, like, effective, but there's not much love in it. Like, there's not much, you know, that kind of, like, deeper work that you do with, like, talking therapy, which with OCD can be really complicated. Like, the good stuff about that is that it sort of, it kind of, like, helps you, like, alleviate blame and understand, like, what's happened to you. And I think CBT might have kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater a little bit. And there are elements of those kind of talking therapies that can really help you forgive yourself and get over some of the really low self-esteem issues that go along with CBT. Go along with OCD. Yeah. And for me, the way I found that and the way I sort of started to care for myself again was actually through doing meditation. And I'd tried meditation like many times, and I'd read enough about it that I was kind of like sold on its benefits, but I was just crap at it. Like, every time I tried, I just got so distracted. Like, my OCD was really bad. Like, I just couldn't do it. So I decided I just wanted to kind of like break my own back. So I booked myself on a 10-day silent Vipassana retreat last summer.
Hardcore.
It was so hardcore, but I was kind of like, I just was just like ready. I was just like, this, I want this. So I did it, and the first 3 days were like absolutely like hell on earth. I was just like, oh God, you know, I've got like, at this point, I had sort of like 8 days left of silence. And then, like, after the third day of just like 8 hours every day straight, constantly bringing my attention back to the present moment, back to my body, back to the sounds, back to sensations, back to my breath. Every time my mind got caught away in thought, I just like felt like just something like give a little bit. And the process of actually watching thoughts come and go in a really pure, non-judgmental way started to feel really healing in a way that that CBT had never done. Like, I actually started to witness basically the theory of what you learn in therapy for OCD, which is like, you know, our thoughts don't really mean anything, and that they, you know, we don't really control them. But I actually like saw it on like kind of like a level of experience, like moment to moment. And that was just really profound. And that was the start of like a much deeper healing process for me. And I realized that I hadn't chosen any of the awful things that had run through my mind. And I actually saw that lack of choice. I saw how thoughts enter the mind. And yeah, it was just that's when I really started. And that's now I practice every day, and I do 10 minutes a day, and just sort of turning up for yourself every day and, you know, making that time, I for me feels really special. I think that there's not that much emphasis on self-care and loving yourself and working on that sort of like bit in your heart that OCD tries to like eat away at in therapy for OCD. So like I found that through meditation.
Absolutely. And I think that's really good. And I'm so glad that retreat had that effect on you. I know those retreats, I've never done one. I want to do one. Those retreats, from what I heard, are just incredibly hard for anyone. But for someone with OCD, it's a million times harder. And I know there's many people I've spoken to with OCD that just haven't been able to complete it. And I don't blame them why. I'm so glad you got through it and you had that revelation.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And like, you know, it's something I get asked when I speak at different things, like, you know, would you recommend meditation? And like, I could never have done, like, when I was in the grip of my OCD, when it was at its worst, I could never have done it. Like, I don't think it would have been a good idea at all. I was only able to do it because I'd already reached a kind of a certain level, and I'd done like a lot of behavioral work to know how to deal with the thoughts. Like, I think it would have been the end of me if I tried it when I was like, you know, suicidal. Yeah. So it's definitely not a decision to be taken lightly, but I don't know, for me it was a real gear change.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do 10 minutes a day as well now, and I agree with you that just showing up for yourself and allowing yourself to detach somewhat from your thoughts or focus on your breath or however you do it is yeah, is meaningful. What do you use any apps or anything like that to support it?
I have 10% Happier, is like a perfect subtitle for me, because it's like a 10% Happier meditation for fidgety skeptics, which kind of describes me. And then also Insight Timer is another good one.
Okay.
But apps are great. Although sometimes I just do a kind of like 10 minutes of kind of like open awareness as well, depending how I'm feeling.
Nice. No, yeah.
And loving kindness meditation is great as well. If anyone like wants to try, like have you tried loving kindness meditation?
Meta? I have done a few. Was that an app?
Meta is like just like the meditation word for loving kindness. But
I've never didn't know that. Yeah, I have done a few.
I love that. It feels great.
They're good because they're guided as well. So if you struggle kind of being alone with your thoughts, it's nice to do a guided one. So I mean. Because you can do love and kindness by yourself once you know the kind of routine, or you can do guided ones.
Exactly. And it's kind of, you can feel really bad about yourself if you've had OCD for a long time. So it's kind of, it's good to kind of like pull at the heartstrings a little bit occasionally and get some positive emotions going around.
Yeah, absolutely. But the concept of meditation has come up more and more frequently on the podcast, interestingly enough, and it's not been something that I've been driving, so that almost,
really
I think that kind of shows something of where the trend's going. That
I think so. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have this conversation in 5 years and it'll be like it'll be old news and it'll be all about
you never know, or maybe some kind of weird hybrid.
Yeah, that's probably more likely.
Yeah, okay, cool. So I got a question here. So on the back of your book, at least on the edition I have, it says I've got OCD but not as you know it, which is obviously a very interesting plug that most people think they know what OCD is but they don't. So I guess the question is, how as a community can we be better at breaking the misunderstanding around OCD?
Well, I think the community is already doing that very well, and I think there's loads of people doing loads of amazing awareness work, particularly on that question. I think that for me, it's just about just trying to talk about it in a way that's engaging and using the resources we have, using our communication channels, using social media to talk about it. But in a way, one thing I will say about the OCD community is it can be quite insular, and we tend to sort of talk to each other a lot rather than sort of reaching out and talking to people on the other side. And I think it's quite easy to feel angry, and certainly I do sometimes, with people's ignorance. And, you know, when people use phrases flippantly or they say, you know, I'm a little bit OCD. I actually had that on a date with a guy the other day. It was really embarrassing. And he was like, yeah, I've got the worst OCD. Like, and then he kind of like moved his like pint around on the bar. Oh. And I kind of like had this moment where I was like, there's like two ways I could approach this. Like, I could like, destroy him. Like, if he didn't know like anything about my work, but like, you know, I could like that would be quite easy to do, like, actually I think you'll find, and like make him feel like 2 foot tall. But like, you know, and it was really frustrating, but also like he wasn't doing it maliciously, he just genuinely didn't know. So I think if we as a community can keep finding ways to talk about it in a way that reached that kind of guy with the pint sat at the bar, then that's all we can do, and time will make a massive difference. But really, I think everyone's doing a really great job. And I went to the OCD Action Conference, when was that, maybe
a
6 weeks
ago.
And it's just so amazing to just see the work that everyone's doing, and it is making a tangible difference. And the stuff that you're doing, Stu, and the stuff that Ashley Curry's doing, and maternal OCD and intrusive thoughts, like, everyone, you know, it's happening, and I think we just keep at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and thank you. Big question for me then, is that guy getting a second date?
no way although there were other factors at play.
Okay.
that wasn't the only reason. I might have let him off for that.
Oh, fair enough.
Well, I had to sit down and give him an OCD lesson eventually.
Yeah, just send him your book.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, cool. So a couple quick questions near the end. So the first one would be, what if you could call up your 20-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Gosh, I would tell her something that she would never have thought possible. I would tell her that, well, one day she'll be happy, and but she won't get there the way that she thinks she's going to get there, because she thinks she's going to get there by finding out a concrete answer to who she is and making her thoughts go away. So I tell her, you're going to be happy, but you're still going to have those thoughts, and you're still not going to have a concrete answer to your identity, because those kind of concrete answers aren't out there to be found in the universe. So you're going to find peace in uncertainty, but you'll get there, so don't lose hope.
Nice, love it. Okay, so last question then is, you've got a billboard in central London. What do you want written on that billboard for the world to see?
Oh wow. Oh my God. What?
Doesn't have to be OCD related if you don't want it to.
Oh gosh. Okay. What do I want written on that billboard? I don't know.
It's the hardest question.
That's a really hard question. That's a really hard question. I don't know. I might have to get back to you on
All right, no
that.
worries. We'll just put an advert for your book.
Yeah, actually, maybe that's giving me an idea. Maybe I will get a billboard.
Okay, cool. So, lastly, then, is there anything else that you want to share that I haven't asked you?
Anything else I want to share? I mean, the only other thing is that I'm working with a charity based out of New York called Intrusive Thoughts. And Stu, you've met my partner there,
Yeah, Aaron.
Aaron Harvey, who's the founder of the charity. And the intrusivethoughts.org is built out of a creative advertising agency in New York. So we tried to use our skills in design and copywriting and UX design to really make a product that kind of doesn't really feel like clinical and medical, like a lot
Yeah.
of mental health resources, and that's accessible. And I would urge anybody seeking info on OCD to check it out, because we're really pleased with how it's going. And yeah, I guess that's it.
Yeah, and absolutely. You guys are doing a really good job with it. I love how the homepage is laid out and it tells a story. And Aaron broke down the whole psychology behind it when I met him. It was fascinating. So
Yeah.
I'll put a link and stuff in the show notes,
Amazing.
so people can head over there. But yeah, no, thank you for your time, Rose. I really
No,
appreciate it.
thanks, Stu. Really appreciate it. That was really great. Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
There you have it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Rose. I certainly did. Don't forget, if you want to become a member of the site, get exclusive episodes and much, much more, head over to theocdstories.com/join. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy, is not a replacement for therapy, and nor should it be. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Take care, and I will speak to you soon.